Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday morning. It's March 19th, 15 degrees here in Old Town Park City. We've got blue sky and sunshine, 19 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Yeah, we've got some frigid temperatures out there as we're kicking off the morning in the teens and low 20s across the area. But we are looking at lots of sunshine as we go throughout the day. So that sunshine will continue to provide us with some better weather conditions throughout the middle and the early afternoon hours here. So we're going to see that sun helping to warm us up. Probably looking at high temperatures in the mid-30s there around Park City with highs approaching the 40-degree mark there in the Heber Valley. As we go into tonight, we're going to be looking at more cold temperatures heading our way as we drop back down into the upper teens to low 20s in both Park City and the Heber Valley. We'll see a few more clouds on the increase as our next storm system begins to approach the area. That storm system moves into the region as we go into your Thursday, but the difference is the storm track is going to be closer to the Canadian border instead of right over the state of Utah. So that means that these systems will just graze us with a little bit of moisture. And so they could provide us with a couple of isolated snow showers on your Thursday afternoon, but it's not looking like it's going to be any type of significant snow events that are going to be moving through. But again, we could have a couple of scattered snow showers, especially around the Park City area with highs in the upper 30s for your Thursday. And in the Heber Valley, we should be seeing those high temperatures climbing into the mid 40s across the area. Now, as to get into your Friday, look for low temperatures once again to drop off into the teens and low 20s. The high temperatures on your Friday in Park City will climb into the upper 30s. We'll be in the mid 40s for the Heber Valley again with just a mixture of clouds and sunshine. Now, Friday night, we got those clouds thickening back up once again, and our next storm system approaching, very similar to the first storm system. This system will graze us by to our north, and so we get the far tail end of it with just a little bit of moisture. What that will mean is the chance of a few scattered snow showers again coming back in for our Saturday, both in Park City and the Heber Valley. But again, not a ton of moisture to work with, so we'll keep an eye on that one. But overall, these storms look to be less potent than the ones that we have been seeing the past couple of weeks. As we go into your Saturday, we're looking at morning low temperatures around the freezing mark with highs in the low 40s there in Park City with highs in the mid to upper 40s in the Heber Valley. Once we get past that, things really start to change with our weather pattern as we get into next week. We're going to be looking at partly cloudy skies giving way to mostly sunny skies. And as we go into next week, we're going to be talking about a nice warming trend heading our way. Morning temperatures at Park City on your Monday start off in the 20s, the mid-20s. Heber Valley, we start off into the upper 20s for morning lows. But we warm up into the mid-40s in Park City. Highs will be in the low to mid-50s. In the Heber Valley by Tuesday, we're looking at sunshine, highs in the low to mid 50s in Park City, and highs around 60 degrees for the Heber Valley. And by the time we get towards next Wednesday, we're talking highs in the 60s in both Park City and the Heber Valley. So it looks like spring is coming in with a little spring note, especially heading into next week, Leslie.
Okay, thank you. And with a look in the backcountry on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Drew. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. I mean, that was a blockbuster yesterday. 20 to 30 inches of the Cottonwoods, 15 inches along the Park City ridgeline. Winds, as forecast, stronger than usual post-frontal. I even saw one gust, Leslie, over 100 miles an hour in the early morning hours along the 11,000-foot level. Certainly kept the ski area control teams and avalanche teams with the highway busy for most of the day. Ski cutting was pretty much continuous, all aspects, all elevations. Few naturals running, particularly during peak snowfall intensity in the afternoon. There was one natural avalanche that came down across Little Cottonwood Canyon in the afternoon. Caught two vehicles. There were no injuries reported. The scene's cleared right now, and so things were very active yesterday, considerable avalanche danger. Today we have areas of considerable avalanche danger still along the highest elevations, and then also for the north to east to south-facing aspects of the mid-elevations. I do think that it's going to be one of the best skiing and riding days of the year. The last few inches were just 5% champagne powder. And things will be slowly stabilizing over the course of the day and into tomorrow. But I would just say it's going to be awesome out there. But temper things because it's not green light conditions out there. You're still going to be able to trigger both loose snow avalanches and then storm slab avalanches within that new snow. But by the afternoon, I think that things would be trending more towards moderate. So stay tuned. You can get all this information more at utahavalanchecenter.org.
Okay, Drew, thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with Park City Engineer Griffin Lloyd, along with Historic Park City Alliance Director Ginger Wicks. Will be talking about the upcoming Main Street waterline repairs and paving project. Deputy Park City Manager Sarah Pearson to preview this week's City Council meeting. And finally, Kelly Gallagher and Karen Kendall with Park City Artists Association have details about their upcoming art show. And for full transparency, both Park City Municipal and the Artist Association are financial supporters of this radio station. And stay tuned. Coming up on The Mountain Life this morning, right after the local news hour, today's guests include a veterinarian epidemiologist who discovered the first new essential fatty acid in nearly 100 years in a bottlenose dolphin. And then a conversation about Snow Basin Resort, upcoming improvements, and how to enjoy the resort during all seasons. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life, heard, of course, every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Taking a look at some local news now, an 11th hour bill intended to reshape the Summit County Council has implications for Wasatch County. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports Wasatch County sent a letter to the governor opposing the legislation.
House Bill 356 was passed just minutes before midnight on the final day of the 2025 legislative session. Utah Governor Spencer Cox hasn't yet signed the legislation, which will require the Summit County Council to change from 5 at-large seats to 5 districts if it passes into law. Debate during the legislative session largely targeted Summit County, but the final version of the bill also sweeps up any county with fewer than 175,000 people. That's why Wasatch County would have to make changes, as County Manager Dustin Graybaugh explained.
The bill as currently approved legislature would require Wasatch County to adopt a 7-district model as opposed to our 5 districts and 2 at large.
The county would need to adopt a map of new council districts by October 2025. Graybaugh said he's also concerned that the bill would require the current council members to be randomly assigned to the newly drawn districts, regardless of where they live.
Yeah, so the bill allows anyone who's currently in office to remain in office, and that when their term expires is when the seat that they are randomly assigned is eligible for election. But again, because of the nature of this random assignment, it's possible they would be ineligible to run for the seat that they would occupy by the end of this year because they may not live in that district.
In a letter sent March 12th, Graybaugh asked Cox to veto the bill and send it back to the legislature for adjustments. Among the county's concerns, he wrote, were late-hour amendments that left county leaders with no time to advocate for their interests. The county also believes voters should be represented by council members who live in the districts. Graybaugh said, quote, citizens would lose the ability to vote for 3 of our 7-member council. Also, candidates for offices would only be able to run for 1 eligible seat instead of 3. These issues jeopardize our ability to ensure our council represents fewer special interests. The county also has concerns about generating qualified candidates from smaller populations if it had to form 7 districts, according to Graybaugh's letter. Finally, Graybaugh noted the bill also impacts other governments with council structures that include a mix of districted and at-large seats. Those include Grand and Morgan counties, as well as the cities of Provo, Sandy, West Jordan, and Ogden. He wrote, quote, we believe that these unintended technical issues should be addressed prior to implementation of this bill. At the end of his letter, Graybaugh suggests the state instead require county councils to have 5 districts or to have districts for 2/3 of its seats, whichever number is greater. That change would still force Summit County to change its council, while Wasatch County could maintain the status quo. Summit County has also opposed the legislation, with Deputy County Manager Jana Young calling the bill a shameful political stunt. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Park City's waterline improvement project begins Monday, March 31st. In the studio with details and how to plan ahead, I have Park City Engineer Griffin Lloyd, along with the Executive Director of Historic Park City Alliance, Ginger Wicks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Griffin, let's start with you and have you give us a little bit of background here. It seems like we've been working on Main Street for a few years. Was it just last year that seemed like it lasted forever?
So initially we planned on a 3-phase project approach, which was going to be over 3 springs. In the summer of last year, we met with HPCA and discussed how the first phase went last spring from April to June, and we decided to accelerate that schedule. So we came back in the fall and did mainline only from Fifth Street up to Sweet. And then this spring we'll wrap up a year early and we'll be doing just fire lines and service lines from Fifth Street to Sweet.
Okay, and so what is it that we're doing? Replacing those water lines that you just noted because they're old?
Yep, so the water lines were last installed in 1980, so their life expectancy is up, and we have a lot of corrosion in this street. So we're replacing all the lines that were installed in the 80s, which was ductile iron. We're replacing those with PVC product, and we expect to get a lot more longevity out of those.
Why is it that the PVC lasts longer?
They're more resistant to corrosion and all the corrosive materials that we have in the soils in Park City. So just a much better product than the ductile iron that we've seen.
Yeah, and we know the corrosive soil part of that has to just do with the mining legacy. Is there some way, though, that you can just pad it with different material all the way along?
So we bed everything in a road-based material, but that when we get groundwater and seeping in, that we still get that corrosion on the pipes. Obviously, water and steel doesn't mix very well, and you get that corrosion. So any of the metallic materials that we do install, we put a waxed tape material around it to protect it even further from those elements.
Okay. So, again, the water lines will be done going down the middle of Main Street, as also kind of the laterals?
Sure. So the main line is done from Fifth Street to Swede down the middle of the road. So we will just be doing perpendicular cuts for each building, service laterals and fire lines into each building. So that involves us going into the sidewalk, and in most cases we'll be inside of the building because we'll run the line into the building so that we're not leaving any material that's, you know, 40 years old plus. And, you know, we don't want to leave a foot or two, so we're going inside the buildings on the majority of these.
Okay. And what's the timeline on this?
So we're looking at starting, we'll mobilize in on the 24th, which is next Monday. We won't be doing any work, just mobilizing in and getting ready for the 31st. And then we'll start on 4th Street, and we have a water line that we're installing from Main Street to Park Avenue on 4th Street. And then starting on the 7th of April, we'll close from 5th to 4th on Main Street, and we'll do all the service laterals and fire lines in that stretch. Once we're complete with that, we'll move from 4th to Swede. We expect to wrap up around the first couple weeks of June.
All right. And then the paving project begins?
Yes. So on the tail end of us, Streets Department has a planned slurry seal that they'll put on the road from everything that we've done, which is from Heber Avenue to Sweet Alley. So they'll apply that on the 24th of June.
Okay. And tell us, what's the difference between slurry seal and roto-milling and paving it?
So slurry seal is a wear surface, and so it's a thin layer that they put on top of the existing road. If they do a mill and pave like they did last year on the bottom end, that's removing at least 2 inches of asphalt and replacing that 2 inches. So this will put a new wear surface on the road, make it look a lot better, until they plan to do the mill and pave on this stretch.
That's going to happen next year.
I'm hearing 26. I'm not sure on a definite timeline on that yet, but yeah.
All right. Is that slurry seal, is that the kind of the tar stuff that we see, like the snakes, or is that the actual kind of small rocks?
So it's curb to curb. So it's not just the crack seal that you'll see that looks like the snakes. It's from curb to curb. So it looks like one solid surface.
Okay. Project cost, do we have a total on it? I mean, I know you've done it year by year, so you've probably broken it down.
Yeah, so each phase was about $1.8 million. We're going to come in about $5.6 million. When we first were looking at this, we were estimating it was going to be about $7.8 million. We were figuring $2 million plus on each phase. So fortunate to have some good bids on this and a great contractor to work with.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not usually how things go in construction world, right? Down instead of up. What does it mean in terms of the businesses and getting their water turned off?
So businesses we will work with, if we need to have any water disruptions, we'll give them at least 48 hours notice. When we tie in each individual water line, have to disrupt their water for just that day, usually 6 to 8 hours. So just working with each business every time we tie one of them in is just that disruption. But the entire street won't be out. The old line is still in service while we're hooking into the new line. And then once the new line is fully operational and all the services are off of it, then we'll disconnect that old line.
Okay, and then just jugs of water to flush the toilet and then others to drink?
Yeah, if any of the businesses have any needs, they can ask us for some water. We also have restrooms along Main Street that are for public use, so.
Okay, so Ginger, what does this mean for Main Street merchants and visitors? It sounds like you can get some free parking out of it.
Yep, so with the construction process, the free parking will return beginning March 31st, and it will run through June 29th, excluding events, of course. So that's an added benefit to try and support the businesses. It is obviously very impactful to the businesses, and we're working with the city to try and mitigate and plan accordingly for all of the impacts. I would say to those that are in the affected area, if you have planned spring closures that you're aware of, please let me know so I can try and help coordinate that around when your business is already going to be closed for the spring season. I would also say please share your delivery and contact information with us so that we can make sure that all the delivery drivers are aware of closures and flow. Griffith's team is amazing and will work with all deliveries so that businesses are not disrupted in that regard. But of course, just letting everyone know of what they're driving into is always helpful.
Yeah, so the free parking, it's all of China Bridge, all of the lots, all along Main Street?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how much parking do you actually lose as a result of construction, Ian?
Well, it obviously varies depending on the section of the street that they're in. When they're in between 4th and 5th, when they're on the street working during the day, we'll lose that parking. But whatever parking they're able to return in the evening for evening business, they will. So it's hard to project exactly what we're going to lose. But again, Griff's team is great. They know the value of parking for the street, and they will return as much as they can at the end of each workday.
Yeah, so what will we see? Will we see one-way traffic only, or will we see just, somebody with a stop sign? Or
so similar to the last two phases, we'll close completely the road between 4th and 5th, and then deliveries can come to the signs. We generally see the larger trucks, and we let them through. Any Amazon deliveries or anything like that, generally they'll give us a heads up that they're coming, and we'll let them in and get as close to the business as we can get them.
Okay. Will all of this be done then in time for the first Silly Market and the Taste of Park City?
It won't. Well, that's a tough question. Of course, we would like it to be done, but as Griff said, going into the first part of June is what we're slated for now. So those first few Silly Markets, we will most likely still be on the street. It will be done, and the road will be slurry sealed in time for Savor the Summit, which is June 28th.
Okay. And then dining decks, you say, will also be impacted?
Yes, dining decks that are in the impacted area, so anything from the post office up, we are holding off placing those on the street until June 30th, again, to accommodate the construction and the slurry seal.
Okay, guys, anything else you think people need to know?
No, I would just say if you have any questions or, again, you know, spring closures, delivery information, please reach out to me, and I can make sure that information gets relayed to the city.
Okay, what's the best way to reach you?
My email is ginger@historicparkcityutah.com.
Okay. Anything from you, Griff?
Just appreciate everyone's patience while we wrap this project up. Know it's been an impact, and just appreciate everyone's patience and working with us.
Okay, Griffin Lloyd, Ginger Wicks, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Park City Council meets tomorrow in work session starting at 3 o'clock with a preview of the 2026 fiscal year budget process, and in the studio with a preview of the meeting, I have Deputy City Manager Sarah Pierce. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So we've got an hour-long discussion on next year's budget starting at 3. The preliminary report sounds dismal. I guess the sentence that caught my eye was, this is one of the lowest revenue forecasts outside of recession the city has projected in decades. So what's happening to be so pessimistic?
Well, you know, we're always conservative in our projections, and this year we're just taking an extra measure of conservatism toward the budget. The revenue, the sales tax revenues projections seem to be quite flat. And, you know, we could be a little bit off with that, but better to go conservative. So we're looking at ways that we can kind of make room for new things that we'd like to do. So we're asking all the budget managers to go in and, you know, maybe they've saved a little bit of money just as a contingency that they could get rid of to make room for the new things they want to do. Maybe there's some combination of programs and processes with other departments that might be a way to consolidate and save some money and save some resources. And we're also asking them to look at technologies. You know, AI is starting to be really prevalent and available, and it could really help us find some efficiencies in our work and possibly save us some money.
Just typing it into ChatGPT to say, how do I save money?
Well, I think, right? I think there's probably some ways to think about, you know, what can AI do to free up time to then work on other things.
Okay. Since personnel is the single largest expenditure of city revenues, does that mean that you won't be filling positions, or staff doesn't get a raise or anything like that?
Possibly on the not filling, if there's some vacant positions that we can maybe perhaps do without, we're going to look at that. We have done a quite robust catching up on market rates and trying to stay competitive with salaries, and we think that we're in a really good position. So we're not looking for a big, you know, change in the pay plan this year.
Okay, it looks like the city took a huge hit on insurance premiums. I think I saw a 35% increase. That's crazy.
Yeah, that was the initial quote that we received. So we went out to RFP, and we are just getting those bids back, and it's looking a lot better than 35%. It's still high, but it's not going to be that much, so thank goodness.
All right. And how I read it, it looks like the city is now also going to start paying for the water it uses, and this looked like eventually about a $750,000 annual cost that we have not been paying for prior to this.
Well, the water fund has been paying for it. Mm-hmm. And now it feels like that, you know, the council really looked at that and said, you know, we should all be paying out of the individual budgets for the water we're using. So, for example, golf, for example, the rec department. And we've analyzed that. We've looked at how much it's going to cost each of those departments. And it's a pretty hefty sum, as you said. And so we're going to phase it in over the next 3 years.
Right. Still city taxpayer dollars, right? So, but will taxpayers then also see a increase on its water rates to pay for this?
That is going to be discussed at an upcoming meeting for council to kind of look at, okay, based on all of this, where are we? Do we still need to increase water fees or not?
All right. And then the capital budget, of course, has the most flexibility. If the city doesn't have the money, you don't do the project. So anything that is being looked at there that could be cut?
We have a number of requests from departments to add capital where we've gone through and kind of tried to, you know, a lot of times you'll request a certain amount for a capital project and then it comes in lower or more expensive. And so every year you kind of need to adjust because a lot of times you're requesting money that may not be spent for 3 or 4 years. You're just trying to, you know, build up that bank. So we're doing all of that analysis, but no decisions quite yet on what's going to be cut. That would be up to the council when we get to those discussions.
Okay, and we're still moving forward with the $15 million city recreation building at City Park and the $6 million
yes.
for the pools.
Yes.
All right. Council will also look at its policy of enterprise funds, and mm-hmm. basically this is like the golf fund, the water fund, funds in which the revenues need to reflect the expenditures. So are there enterprise funds that are being considered to be phased out?
You know, not at this point. Council asked really for a policy discussion and kind of more understanding about how enterprise funds work and if you wanted to move something from enterprise back into the general fund or vice versa. How would that work? How much time does it take? So that's the discussion we're going to have tomorrow.
All right. And also, as I was looking through the staff liaison assignment list, the LGBTQ plus task force has been redlined. Is that gone away?
Well, yeah. And you know, this task force was set up as an incubator with the hope that a standalone organization could be formed. And we're thrilled that that worked. Summit Pride is off and running and on their own, and we continue to be a resource for each other and appreciate their work in the community. It's more important now than ever.
All right. City leaders met with UDOT officials yesterday wanting to see if the SR 224 within the city limits had to be widened to that 10 feet. Can you tell us what the response was?
Yeah, we had a really productive meeting yesterday. It was representatives from Summit County, High Valley Transit, and Park City and UDOT. You know, this project, the 224 BRT, is a transformational transportation project for this community, and everyone wants to make sure we get it right. The project has a $25 million federal grant attached to it. And given the situation at the federal level, we wanted to explore our options and understand the risks of any proposed changes. We ended the meeting with a commitment to continue to discuss the concerns, and we've already scheduled a meeting for next week.
Okay, what changed though? Because when this was originally approved and submitted, the city was okay with the plan. So what happened between then and now?
Well, it's been a 10-year process, and actually yesterday I was corrected on that. I think it's actually been longer than 10 years that we've been working on this. So it's gone through several councils and several mayors. And I think every time you look at a project that's this long lead, you have different perspectives and new, fresh eyes with new, fresh questions.
Right. So is the city in danger of losing federal funding on this project if it does change?
The federal grant really remains an uncertainty. Changes at the federal level are happening at a rapid pace, and we don't actually have definitive answers. It definitely remains a risk, but we don't know to what extent. So we need to continue to talk about it with UDOT and the county.
Okay. Tomorrow, the council will also discuss a wildlife crossing pilot program for SR 224. And again, this would be a federal grant. With the uncertainty, I mean, does this federal grant even exist anymore? Do we know that?
You know, we haven't heard concerns about this one it's at risk. The transportation ones, you know, we've received kind of communication that all of those are under review. But on this in this case, we haven't heard that. So, you know, we want to talk to the council about it tomorrow and see what they'd like to do.
All right. And if the city received funding for the crossing, how much are we talking about?
That's a good question. I don't know that number. I think this is a grant to kind of look at our options. You know, what is the best type of crossing? Is it fencing? Is it an overpass kind of thing? Is it technology that we could use to, you know, protect the wildlife? So we just need to dig into that and figure out what it is.
Okay. And I mean, it appears that the wildlife fencing along I-80 has been pretty successful. I mean, certainly there's that stray animal, but I mean, is there a concern though, putting up fencing? We kind of block out the great view coming into Park City?
Yeah, I think that's what needs to be discussed, is just the trade-offs, and you know, everybody obviously cares about wildlife and we want them to be able to cross. It's in safety, but you know, there's the entry corridor and the aesthetics that have to be considered.
Okay, the council will also consider a $16 million contract to purchase 9 electric buses and 3 charges. Again, federal dollars have always paid about 80% of these bus costs, and that money, you're hoping, is still available?
We're hopeful, but this is a discussion we need to have with council and just get their appetite for how much risk they want to consider, given that these federal dollars are not clear, not certain. So,
okay.
Big decision.
And it sounds like the city's ready to throw in the towel on the 13 Proterra buses that it purchased. This is like 5 years earlier before the city would have. How come?
They're becoming more and more difficult to service. The Proterra company has gone in and out of bankruptcy. They've sold off to other companies, and it's become more of a burden than a help at this point. And so we've actually gotten permission from the FTA to retire them early because it's part of our federal grant compliance that you have to keep them on a road on the road for a certain amount of time. But this is something that everybody that owns Proterras is going through. So we're dealing with it.
Okay, that's interesting that you had to have permission to do so. So what happens to them? I mean, nobody wants them. If you can't get parts, nobody else can.
Right. I don't actually know. I think they'll be scrapped. Maybe there's parts that could be salvageable.
So is there any monetary value to them? Or just other than?
There might be. I don't know the details on that.
Okay. And I guess, well, it's been great to have no emission buses. I mean, like, at what cost? I mean, the city's diesel buses are workhorses and appear to be much better performers.
It's true. I mean, we're early adopters of electric buses, and I think, you know, Park City and the council's goals have been, you know, about sustainability, and so that comes with some trade-offs, and we've been willing to do that so far.
All right. The pilot program for child care subsidies will run out of money by the end of the year with the $1 million that was the council had funded. Will the city try and continue that? Because there, again, when you look at the budget, I mean, that's an easy $1 million savings.
Well, and, you know, the council budgeted $1 million for the first year, and we actually have gotten through a second year. Well, it's going to end up being a year and a half, which is great. And it's so great that it's being used. And we've gotten so many accolades and so many stories written about this program. A lot of other municipalities are contacting us to understand more about how it works and to pilot their own program. So we feel really proud of it. Yes, it's projected that we're going to run out of money at the calendar year end. So we want to talk to council about what they'd like to do. Or do they want to fund it now, or do they want to maybe give it a few months into the year and see how, you know, if the sales tax projections are maybe better than we'd hoped and there's some extra money for it.
All right. Park City going forward with ranked choice voting for this year's municipal election. As we hear, it may save the city and candidates money, but it also keeps candidates out of the public view. I mean, when there's a primary, candidates will have to go door to door. I mean, there'll be public forums. We learn who the candidates are. So in the city's council's mind, I mean, this is a good thing to have less exposure?
I'm not sure that's the angle that they're basing their decision on. They will, you know, with ranked choice voting, you don't have to go through a primary. And so the announcement for candidacy moves to August, but that still gives you, gosh, 3 months almost to, you know, get the word out and talk about your platform. And maybe the concentration is a good thing where people are paying attention. You know, it's closer to the election, and I think the council's interested in giving it a try.
All right. And do we know if it's going away? Because there was a bill that needed to be approved to extend it another 10 years.
The legislature did not extend it, but it's likely that it will be brought back during this session next January. So that's we'll see how it goes. We're going to pilot it this year and hope that if we like it and the ledge continues the pilot, then we're all set.
Okay. Also, real quick, the changes proposed for public art. We're talking about, a new grant process? Can you explain that?
Well, there's two things that I'm actually bringing to council tomorrow. One is that I think a lot of people know Jenny Dearson, who ran the special events department, and she also headed up our public art program. She had a very unique combination of skills and experience, and as we kind of transitioned away from Jenny when she left us, we have, over the last few months, we've recognized that we just don't have the expertise on staff to manage the public art program, and we're getting ready to spend quite a bit of money on public art. We have the 1% program where 1% of all our major capital projects will go toward a public art piece of some sort in that construction project. And we really feel like we need somebody with some expertise. So I'd like to talk to council about considering going out to RFP for a contractor that could do that work. Summit County does something very similar, and it works really well for them. It's a part-time position that would be contracted. So we're looking just for some feedback on that and see if council's interested. And then the second thing is this grant idea. For those that were attending the council meeting last week, the Nonprofit Advisory Committee came in with recommendations for the nonprofit grants. And there were several arts organizations that were not supported through that process. And it wasn't any fault of the committee. It just was the way that the grant process was set up and the criteria. And I think a lot of us feel really strongly that arts need to be continue to be supported, as the council did, and they voiced that and asked the committee to go back and look and see if there was a way to support arts and culture going forward. So I'm recommending or suggesting to council that perhaps the Public Art Advisory Board is the body that could be doing this granting for arts and culture organizations and kind of separate it out so that they're not competing against food pantries and mediation services for immigration and those kind of things.
Okay, because that's what I was going to ask. I mean, is that too big of a job for this advisory committee?
But it might be. Well, yeah.
Okay. Hey, finally, before I let you go, this well could be your last interview before retirement. When's your last day?
My last day is April 4th, so it's coming right up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you've been with Park City Municipal for how long?
5 years.
Okay, and that, of course, before that, of course, was with the Sundance Institute for many years.
17, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess in that time with Parks, anything you're especially proud of?
You know, I would say the biggest thing I'm proud of are the people. The people I work with at City Hall are talented and honest and work hard every day to deliver excellent services, projects, and programs that really made my experience so great. So I would say that's what I'm mostly proud of.
Okay, well, what's next for you? I know your husband's happy to see that you're going to join him in retirement.
Yes, we are planning to get in our camper van and do a bunch of traveling. I kind of picked this time of year to start my retirement because I love to be in the garden and be outside in the summertime, and so I wanted to be able to have all that time.
Okay, and we have had job openings for not only your position, but an open deputy city manager. Where are we with that?
We are very close. The candidate field has been narrowed down to the finalists, and that final interview process is next week.
Okay, and we're still talking about hiring too.
Two, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I did. We are hosting the State of the City next week on Tuesday night at the Santee Auditorium in the library, and that starts at 6:30. And the mayor is going to talk about successes of last year, challenges we're facing, and opportunities ahead of us. And I really encourage people to get engaged. You know, there's a lot of great people in this community that we don't hear from often enough, and this might be a great way to get that started. So I encourage everybody to come out for that.
Okay, Sarah Pierce, Deputy City Manager through April 4th. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. The Park City Artists Association presents its second annual Spring into Art, a local artist showcase. In the studio with details and Artist Association members, Kelly Gallagher and Karen Kendall. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So do you want to start, Kelly, and tell us when and where this is going to be?
Yes, the show is going to be this weekend. It's a 3-day show, which we're really excited about. So it's Friday from 4 to 8, Saturday 10 to 6, and Sunday 10 to 4. And this is at the Yarrow, the DoubleTree by Hilton Park City. It's going to be in the big ballroom on the main floor.
Okay. Successful enough last year to consider doing it again, huh?
Yes. And we are so excited to be able to do this for a second year in a row.
Great. Karen, can you talk to us a little bit about what's going to be on display there?
Oh, yeah. We have 29 artists that will be showing with a variety of mediums. We have glass sculptures, metal sculptures, various different kinds of painting, watercolors, mixed media, etc. We have jewelry, we have textiles, photography, a little something for everybody. It should be a really good show. And we have about half of the artists are new from last year, too. So it'll be a different variety than what was shown last year if people had gone last year. They'll see some new things.
All right. And how were the artists selected?
Oh, we put out a general call for artists, and we started with a call just within Park City Artists Association, and then later we expanded it because we wanted to make sure we filled the show completely and then give other artists opportunities. So we have a lot of Park City Artists Association members, but then also some other artists. And we have some folks coming up from Salt Lake City, as well as here in the Wasatch back.
Okay. So everything there is for sale?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to be offering then.
Oh, yeah. So I'm a steel artist, and so I've got sculptures and wall hangings, and, you know, most of them are brightly painted or not rusted, but yeah, so it's going to be really fun. Some of the things that I would normally put in the summer shows or at Create PC.
Okay, so are we talking like yard art or
I'll have a little yard art, but also primarily inside art.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what about you, Karen?
Well, I do abstracted landscapes, mostly in mixed media. So I use acrylic, handmade collage papers, some pastels, and do like super abstracted landscapes, bright colors. So I'll have a handful of pieces from my new collection of work and a few pieces that are from last year collection of work. So a variety, small, big.
Mm-hmm. And what are your opportunities? I mean, as a Park City artist to display your ware? I mean, you'd have to put these shows together, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. There's not, honestly, a lot of opportunity for local artists to display, except for some of the shows, things that the Arts Council might put on, like their show out in the Red Barn in mm-hmm. Oakley. We have that opportunity. We have an opportunity, obviously, to apply for the Kimball Arts Festival. And then we have the Create PC Gallery. So there's a lot of local artists, all local artists in the Create PC Gallery. But it's limited, right? You can show up one or two or three or four pieces, whereas a show like this, then artists can bring a whole collection of works and show, you know, all the things that they do, which is a really great opportunity. So, yeah, it's a little bit limited, to be honest. So we try and create opportunities for ourselves.
Yeah, and I know you also have a show sometimes in the Park City Library.
Oh, yeah, that's not... Yes, yes, and... We're so grateful for the library for offering that opportunity. So they only hang, as far as I know, local artists. I just had an individual show there. One of our other members, Mary Perry, has a solo show there right now. She does photography. It's really, really great. You should go see it. But it's really awesome that they offer that to the local artists. Sometimes there's multiple shows, and that's a really great resource for us.
Okay. How many members do you have in the Artists Association?
Right, so it's really great. We are almost at 70 members now, and so that's a decent increase over last year. And so it's really nice because we feel like we're an advocacy organization, and we want to try to make sure we give as many opportunities as possible. So it's nice that additional members can take advantage of that. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us about the Spring into Art?
Would it be okay for me to identify our sponsors?
Sure.
Because we've had some really great sponsors this year, and that's allowed us to actually have some advertising and try to get the word out, which is really wonderful. And we do thank that, you know, you're allowing us to be on the air this morning. But so obviously the Doubletree was a sponsor of ours. Park City Chamber of Commerce, Caprock Wealth Management, Jans Mountain Outfitters, Crandall Capital, Railton North and Company Windermere, and State Farm Insurance, and lastly, Lundstrom Chiropractic. So they all helped us out, which we really appreciate.
All right, supporting the arts. Ladies, thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's Kelly Gallagher and Karen Kendall with Park City Artists Association. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Summit County Council members believe their most hotly debated political issue, housing and land use, is about to, quote, get ugly. That's because state lawmakers passed a bill to divide the all at-large council seats into districts. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports.
Current council members criticized House Bill 356 during their housing policy discussion last Wednesday. HB 356, which passed the Utah legislature with minutes to spare, will divide the at-large council into five districts. Some Eastern Summit County residents and Republicans have praised the bill, saying it will increase ideological diversity on the council and give the rural side of the county a voice. Now, some Democrats currently on the council are saying there could be problems down the road during land use discussions. March 12th, the council set a goal to build 1,500 affordable housing units over the next decade, but it didn't decide where to put them.
We've just been handed a flaming bag of excrement from the legislature by districting the county seats. And instead of having this discussion as an unaffiliated at-large legislative body, it's now going to get divided into districts. And if you think that the not in my backyard problem was problematic for a larger council, it's now going to be a much louder drum.
That's Councilmember Roger Armstrong. Growth and development loom large in Wasatch-backed politics. Developers can reap large profits in Park City and the Snyderville Basin, but without rezoning, those regions are nearly maxed out. The next closest ski area real estate is in Wasatch County, which the U.S. Census Bureau says had more percent growth in new housing between July of 2021 and July of 2022 than any other U.S. county. Then there's rural Eastern Summit County, where fifth-generation families haven't had to contend with large-scale developments and gated resort communities until recently. Eastside zoning restricts density more than Wasatch County's, but that doesn't mean projects aren't coming. A top-of-mind project for northern Summit County residents is Hoytsville Cedar Crest Village. The developer has asked Colville for annexation, but may still ask the county council for a rezone, too. In South Summit, landowners are pushing for a new town called West Hills, west of Camas, to encourage, quote, modest new growth. After a contentious series of public hearings, residents will vote on the new town this November. After Summit County voted to transition to a five-person council in 2006, council members voted to reduce how much density was allowed across the county. That way, larger developments would require negotiation.
It's going to get more interesting.
It's going to get ugly.
Yeah.
Councilmember Canis Hart says he's been supportive of plans for a public-private partnership on county-owned land in Jeremy Ranch across the interstate from his neighborhood of Pinebrook.
If in this theory I'm the Pinebrook Jeremy Ranch representative and my people are vehemently opposed to this, as they will clearly articulate that they are, suddenly I have to change my whole position on this because I represent now that group of people.
HB 356 allows council members to serve the rest of their current terms, but starting in 2026, which district they represent will be decided by lottery. The district lottery could leave some council members representing areas they don't live in. As a result, some may have to wait longer to run for re-election because their neighborhood seat may have been taken by another candidate in the meantime. And because four of the five in the council live in Park City or the Snyderville Basin, Westsiders could represent Eastsiders for the first 2 years of the new district format. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, some of the world's best alpine skiers are training in Park City this week. KPCW's Christine Weller reports they're preparing to compete at the Audi FIS Ski World Cup Finals in Sun Valley.
A handful of World Cup teams will train at the Utah Olympic Park this week. Park City Ski and Snowboard Alpine Director Tommy Eckfeldt said Norway's men's World Cup speed team was training at the park Tuesday.
They're here for a couple days to tune up and then they're out. Obviously, with the inclement weather today, I think it's put a little bit of a hamper on their plans with the high winds here at West Peak, but they've said they've had really good training at the Spencer F. Eccles Olympic Mountain Center here at the Utah Olympic Park.
Eckfeldt said Swiss and French teams will arrive to train at the park later in the week after Norway's team heads out to compete in the FIS Ski World Cup Finals at Sun Valley Resort. While the Utah Olympic Park doesn't have runs as long as typical World Cup Finals downhill tracks, Eckfeldt said it does have tracks that compare in steepness and difficulty.
Dominic Paris from Italy was up here the other day with the Red Bull team, and he commented saying that, yeah, it was pretty legit trail. And it just kind of keeps breaking over. And it just means you just got to be on your game the whole way down. So these World Cup athletes are even seeing the challenges of our trail and our home training venue, which is pretty cool to hear them even complaining as well.
Eckfeldt said some Team USA athletes have also been spotted training at the Utah Olympic Park, including Lindsey Vonn. He said the mountain operations team also did a good job of preparing runs, even with the limited snow that's fallen this winter season. Eckfeldt said the team has been scraping down to the ice in an effort to maintain the surface.
Think of, you know, driving on a dirt road that's really bumpy versus a smooth paved road. So that's what we're trying to give the athletes here.
The Audi FIS Ski World Cup Finals at Sun Valley are March 20th to 27th. Top alpine athletes will compete in the downhill, Super G, giant slalom, and slalom. Christine Weller, KPCW News.